Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I read about one case called the Brooklyn Slasher.
That was a really great case. It ended up being an attempted murder, but it was just like a perfect storm. Pretty much what happened was a woman was on a park bench and a guy just walked up to her and slit her throat. She was very fortunate. She like survived, but there was a guy selling textbooks to a local school and saw the guy and he remembered everything about him. He's like, his hair looks like the running back for the Baltimore Ravens. He looks like this, looks that. So I did the drawing. And within a couple hours, they knew exactly who he was, and they were able to arrest him.
Holy.
There was a giant press conference about it at One Police Plaza. Mm-hmm. And that time frame, there was a huge rash of stranger slashings. The mayor, the police commissioner, all they had a picture of my sketch. We were actively looking for these people, and we just caught this guy, and it just blew up. And then, but that was my first really cool case, and it just kept going on and on. It's cool doing work, getting out there, helping people.
So you go, your first day, you have field training officers, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How long do you have to work with one of those?
So the program always changes throughout the years. When I went through, which I was happy, like I heard stories about in the academy, they would put you out in your grade uniform and make you go stand on a street corner and see what's up. Like I didn't hit the street until I was fully graduated with a gun and shield.
Yeah.
So their program was 6 months. We had a field training sergeant and two field training officers who were like anti-crime guys that knew the job, and they would take you out. So pretty much they would drop you all on foot posts and like shooting prone locations. You would stand there and they would pull up in a car and pick you up and show you how to do police work, like how to do car stops, how to do this, how to do that, you know, how to do a radio run. So they would just gradually. And if your head was screwed on tightly, you got picked up more from your foot post. So this is January in New York on a coastal precinct. You know, so there's pretty much it's south of JFK Airport. So you have Jamaica Bay and then you have the ocean. So it's like a little strip of land. It's like the land that time forgot. And it's right on like the very edge of New York City. It's just a forgotten place. And so if your head was screwed on, if they liked you, you got picked up a lot. So
nice. And what I'm looking, I'm not ignoring you here. I'm looking, we had a retired officer on that goes by the nom de guerre of Vic Ferrari, who has written a couple books. Hilarious. Vic tells the story about when he was on foot patrol and was a rookie and getting dropped off on those corners and his buddy was a block away on a corner. And I don't know, something happened and his buddy kind of ratted him out to the sergeant that was in charge of you new guys. You know, and it was pretty ugly what happened there. But he's hilarious. If you ever... I was looking to get his episode number, but I can't find it here. Right when I'm looking for something, I can't find it. Yeah. Vic Ferrari. Like the car Ferrari.
It's been said a lot, but it's like, you know, front row tickets to the greatest show on earth. It's it was really cool. Yesterday I went to a reunion. So I did midnights for a while. So we just went to a bar and all these cops and that were retired and still working and stuff. We all got together and it was just funny, you know, talking about all the good old days and like the wild stories and stuff.
Yep. I tell you, you never miss that. And especially, well, you know, now that you're retired, you don't have that same camaraderie on a daily basis like you do when you're on the job.
Yeah.
That's an adjustment.
It is. Walking in and seeing everybody and having a story. And
good stuff. Good memories. Yeah. So you're on the job for how long before somebody tells you about a forensic artist?
So one of my good friends, he was one of my team leaders in the Army. He was from New York originally. He's the one that told me to take the NYPD test. Thank God I listened to him. He took the test too. So we both got hired. So he was in the Bronx. We always kept contact. In 2011, he calls me up. He's like, hey, you want to do an interview with Tom Brokaw on the Intrepid? I'm like, yeah. It was for American Movie Classics. So they wanted to interview us because they liked our story, how we're both in the military and went to Iraq together and then went to the NYPD together. So we did an interview and met Tom Brokaw, really awesome guy. When I was there, there was a bunch of higher ups from the NYPD and they're like, hey, he says you can draw really good. I'm like, yeah, you know, I can draw. They're like, I'm actually good friends with guys in the sketch artist unit. You should talk to them and see if there's a position opening. And I'm like, what? I had no clue. Yeah, I'm like, what? I didn't know anything about this world of sketch artists. So they made a phone call. I went in and I talked to the senior artist. He was a first grade detective, this guy Juan Perez, legend in the sketch artist community. So we did the whole interview and he's like, yeah, man, we'll do a test and we'll see how you do. And, you know, we'll go from there. So I went in, I took the NYPD sketch artist test, did really well, thank God. And he's like, man, we really like you and everything. The only thing, this is a 3-man unit. You have to wait for me to retire, kid. And I'm like, okay. So I went back to
they hook you.
That was in 2011. So he ended up retiring in the end of 2014, and they picked me up in January of 2015. So I went back to, you know, running around chasing bad guys for the next couple of years. And the thing that's crazy too, like retrospectively thinking back, if somebody came in and took that test and did better than me, or I would have been asked out and, you know, my mm-hmm. life would have had to go a different way. I was very blessed and everything worked out. And he retired in 2014 and I got picked up and went right into the detective bureau and started that whole adventure.
Well, so the 9 years that you're on patrol, what's the most memorable case on those first 9 years with NYPD that you remember? I know there's a ton of them. You guys, I mean, how
yeah,
many?
Yeah, I don't.
You might answer 30, 40 calls in a shift, right?
So, yeah. So the one thing that was nice about our precinct was it was a violent precinct. There was a lot of activity, but it's very seasonal. So you caught your breath. In the wintertime, that place would freeze over and there, you know, it'd be nothing going on. But in the summer, you had a lot of, you know, violence and, you know, people getting shot and stuff like that and gang activity and everything. But I'm trying to think. I did 5 years on patrol on midnights, and then I went to the conditions team. At the time in the precincts, they had conditions, which would just be anything the CO wanted taken care of in the command that you would target. Like, oh, you got to do this. You know, there's drug-prone locations. Go here, go there. Then they had SNU teams, which would do all the narcotic stuff in the precinct. And then you had anti-crime, which were going out there trying to get guns off the street and everything. Mm-hmm. But, just a lot of stories, a lot of wild stuff I don't talk about. It's so funny.
Understood. But,
yeah, yeah, what's you a, know, vehicle pursuits and stuff. What's up? I'll get you. Want a good? You want a story? I'll
sure.
I'll
try, I was well, going. First of all, what's a SNU unit?
It's their street narcotics.
Okay,
so
now tell us a good story.
I talked to you obviously prior, and you're like, "Tell me some stories." And all my stories are a little dicey, so I was like, "Let me get a good funny story." Everybody likes animals, right? I have a ton of animal stories. It's so funny. So my partner wasn't in that day. I'm working with another good guy. So we're going and we get a job and he was like half asleep in the car. The job comes over and it's a bat job, right? Instantly, I'm thinking, all right, cool. You know, like a bat flew into somebody's house, an apartment building. So I wake him up. I'm like, yo, let's go. Like, all right, we go. So there's a private apartment complex and he starts pulling his gun out. I'm like, yo, what do you got your gun out for? And he's like, it's a bat, right? Guy with a bat. I'm like, no. Like vampire bat. He's like, oh, okay. So the door opens up. And this muscle bodybuilding black dude opens the door in a towel and he's like, yo, man, I'm really sorry to call you guys. I know it's late. I don't even think I'm a pussy or anything, but like this bat flew in my apartment and it's freaking me out. I'm like, oh, yeah, no problem. I got you. So I go in there and I'm like, where is it? And he's like, oh, it's in the back room. So I go in the back room and this bat is just flying circles around the room. I have my nightstick out. I'm like trying to hit it, trying to stun it. I'm missing it. So I look at the guy. I'm like, do you have another towel? And he's like, yeah. So he gets me a towel, right? Uh-huh. And the bat does one wrap. I throw the towel up, capture the bat. Dude, I grab the bat. And the first thing I think about is, what am I going to do with this bat? Yeah. So there's a sergeant on the day tour who I love. I always put types of animals in his mailbox. The mailbox behind the police desk, there's little drawers. I'll put the bat in the drawer. Oh. So when he opens it up, the bat will fly out. So I'm carrying the bat downstairs, and this poor little bat's just crying. He's like, meep, meep, meep. So I'm like, obviously, I'm not going to put this thing in a – like, it's going to make so much noise. So when I get downstairs, of course, every sector car working in the midnight just showed up because everybody wants to see this bat, right?
Yeah.
So I have it in the towel, and the thing's crying. The guy's like, don't give me back the towel. No problem. So I walk out. So everybody's gathered around. So I go to the front of the police car, and I have the towel. So I'm going to open it up. So I – open up the towel, everybody's looking at it, and this bat, it's like a gargoyle. It's like he's like falling around with its wings like a little dragon from Game of Thrones. So everyone's looking at it like, oh crap, it was pretty big, right? The bat jumps, the bat takes off, flies in a couple circles, goes right into somebody else's open window in the same apartment building.
Oh,
so I'm like, I go over the radio. I'm like, 91, you know, non-crime corrected. And we all drive away. So the whole night I'm waiting to hear somebody call about a bat that flew into their house. So like, never got a phone call. That bat went right back into that building, right into somebody's window. It was like a summer day.
So funny.
That's hilarious.
So funny, man. But, you know, it was like seven of us. We're all sitting there and we're just like watching this thing. And they just went, oh my God, they just went to somebody's house.
I could see your sergeant coming in here and opens that drawer and a bat flies.
Well, so yeah, one day I'm driving near the bay and it's at night and I see all these lights out on the water. So I get out the car. I'm like, oh, it's a bunch of guys out there fishing for crabs. So I'm like, hey, come over here. So the guy's like, oh, we in trouble? I'm like, no, I'm in trouble. What do you got there? You get all these crabs. And I'm like, can I have one? He's like, yeah, dude. So I got the biggest crab. It was like this big. Put it in a bucket. Put it in his drawer. So in the morning, he comes in. He's like, how's everybody doing? He opens up the drawer. He just shut the drawer. It was so funny. Put a frog in there one time. Yeah, he's a good dude. Good dude.
He must have a good sense of humor. When I was a city cop in West Virginia, we had a janitor. We had one janitor. What, 35-man department. Clifford was his name. Clifford was an old guy. He was in his early 70s. And out in the garage, you know, the where he brought prisoners in, that's where his cabinets were for cleaning supplies and all that. And one of the guys, I don't know how he did it, but caught a possum on the side of the road, stuck it in Clifford's cabinet. And we'd pick Clifford up like at 3 o'clock in the morning. He'd come in and start cleaning. He went out and opened the locker door. And there's that possum, you know, ready to attack him.
Yeah.
Clifford came in looking for a gun to go out there and kill that possum. Like, no. We'll get it. We'll get it out for you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It is funny.
There's a lot.
You got to have things like that to relieve the tension. And most everybody in the police department has a very good sense of humor and they don't have thin skin. And not everybody, but most everybody.
Yeah. You know, it's just like the day to day. That's a lot. It was good, though. I got like same thing with the military, like going over Iraq, got like a lot of wild stories. Same thing with police department. I never felt like I missed out, you know, had a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
But,
keeps coming back, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's good.
So 9 years goes by. Oh, and listen, you mentioned when we were talking last week that you joined the police department. Why? Why did you join? Other than needing a job.
Yeah, no, I had a family member that went prior, like years before me, and then this guy I grew up with, he went to Maritime College, which was it the Marine Merchant Academy,
mm-hmm.
and he did that for a couple of years, and he did a great job, but it's just like you're away from your family all the time, so he was like, oh, let me try to get an NYPD and I'll go to Harbor. So as I'm getting ready to get out, I would say like maybe a year before I got out, I called him up and he's like, yeah, dude, you gotta do it. So I'm like, how's the academy? Is it like hard? He's like, dude, you'll be good. Just study this stuff. And just give me pointers and tell me about it. So that sparked my interest. Also, I didn't have 60 credits. And NYPD takes you with 2 years military. Also, the NYPD is very accommodating for military people. So they let you buy back your military time of service.
Yeah.
So you could retire early, which is really nice. I was like, I could do this. And one thing too about it is I'm glad I had the law enforcement experience after the military experience. I think the military experience prepared me personally to be a cop. You know, tactically aware and how to talk to people and all that types of stuff. So it was the next step. It just made sense.
Did you become a policeman because you wanted to go kill people?
No.
You wanted to help people, right?
No, I wanted to help people.
That's what you told me during our interview. You said you just wanted a job where you could go help others.
Yeah.
And I bring that up because we see all the anti-police rhetoric that's out there now. So fund the police. And we do have a few bad apples in our bunch every once in a while. And when that happens, the media exploits that. And it taints all of us. They want to lead the public to believe that we're all bad.
Yeah.
And we saw this 100 times here on the Game of Crimes. Nobody hates a bad cop more than a good cop.
Yeah.
Somebody makes an honest mistake, that's one thing. If you're out there to hurt other people, that's not what it's about. And they need to be below the prisons. They have no right to even be in prison with criminals.
Absolutely.
That sucks. I always like to make a point of that. I know cops all around the world. I haven't met a single cop yet that joined because they want to kill people.
No.
It's ridiculous, the crap that goes on.
Yeah,
out there.
You know, the dehumanizing of police officers is just so, it's just, you know, a couple of years, it was really at its high point, but like, I'm flesh and blood. I have a family. I want to go home. I just want to do my job and protect people that can't, you know, help themselves and be out there and just serve my community. And they want to demonize me. It's ridiculous. There's a lot of good people there. And like people are like, oh, there's dirty cops. There's dirty people that work at Target. There's dirty people that work in corporate America. Like people are people, you know? Mm-hmm. So like the internal affairs and the NYPD is massive. If I ever did a police call and did something sideways, you just call 911 and instantly you can be connected with somebody and start the investigation on me. There's such a big system in place. Is it perfect? No, but it's something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's addressed. It's addressed because we don't want bad cops out there working with us.
No, absolutely.
Just going to get us in trouble.
Absolutely.
Well, glad you said that. So, so now what was the test that you had to take to get on the forensic artist?
Yeah. So it was a pretty basic test. It was pretty wild. The first one is they give you a photograph of somebody. So you're drawing frontal pictures, like you see all the wanted posters and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they give you an old mugshot from the 70s and 80s. And the first part of the test is just to draw an exact portrait of the person. You do that. I'm sweating. He's like, yo, this is it, man. You take this test once and that's it. And the NYPD is huge. There's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of art schools and like that they go to school in New York for art. And then they fall by the wayside. They become police officers. So the NYPD is full of talent. So sweating. Do the first one, good. The second part is they take photos from several different people, and you have to combine elements. So like use the eyes and the nose of this person, the lips of this person, the hair of this person, all that stuff. Put it together, and then you make it look like a person. So they're checking for proportions, making sure that you can draw a person. Because some people go in there and they draw like wacky stuff. Pablo Picasso.
Yeah, that would be me.
The third part is the person given the test, the artist, he has a photograph. You can ask him any question you want and you can't look at anything. You have to draw a picture of him. And then they flip it around and see how close you got. So, you know, does he have a mustache?
Gosh.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And then you actually see what you did. So I did good on that. Thank God. And then the fourth part of the test is they do a mock scenario where they have two people at police headquarters that have never seen each other back to back. They spin around, look at each other for like a minute, which is like the length of a which is actually a long time, like a length of a robbery or something. And then you interview the one person who's the mock victim. Mm-hmm. You draw the person and then you see who the person is that's in the building and they show then you see how close you can get to actually doing the person. So, yeah. So they take that, they throw it in a folder. They look at it, they kind of grade it, and then they would compare it with other people. So they always would have a couple people on file, like who can draw in the department to call up at any time. So fortunately enough, I did really good, and the rest became history. Thank God, you know, there's a big change.
That's pretty cool. It's how long did that test take?
Maybe like 2 hours. The thing too, like with that's another thing too, is they don't want you to spend like 17 hours with a victim doing a drawing. Like you got to be pretty fast. You got to interview them, and these people, you know, they've been victimized. You know, the victims of like some heinous crime stuff. You don't want to be sitting in there forever. You want to make it like the best experience ever, find out what they said about the criminal, get it done, get a thumbs up from them, and then, you know, be on with their day and stuff. So, but that's another part of it too, is just to be expedient and get it done.
So trying to help Redneck Hillbilly here understand how you can draw something without seeing it, just from somebody saying, yeah, he had a big nose, he had eyes set close together, he had a receding hairline, that kind of stuff. How do you do that?
So the way I would do it is, first of all, you know the basic anatomy of a human, like the way that the proportions are on the face. The top of your ear goes to the top of your eyes. Your eyes are generic. Everything can subject to change, but your eyes is the same distance as one eye is in the center. Like all the proportions. So then what you do is you just go through the list and just ask, and then you do it almost like a caricature of the person. Like, oh, he has a big nose, and you do that. Another part, when I actually got the job, they show you how to do everything. You interview the person, you find out what the guy looks like, you get like a mental image, and then you have them go through photos of previous perps from the 70s and 80s. And these are all people that have been convicted, that there's no way that these people are presently walking around in the condition. So we had boxes for every age, race. They go through them and they pick out pieces to give you the base for your drawing. And then I would draw in private, put it, and then I would turn it around and show them. And sometimes they'd be like, oh my God, that looks horrible. No, but sometimes like it'd be dead on, but sometimes they would want to make changes and they'd be like, oh, I'll make the nose thinner or put more beard on them or put a hat. You just go back and forth trying to get the best sketch you can, as close as you can, to help the detectives in the field find the person.
So you're getting this information from people who have just been in a very traumatic situation.
Yeah.
How accurate is their memory, and how do you get them to calm down so they can talk to you reasonably?
So the thing is, the longer they're with the person, the more accurate it is. But also, too, a lot of people, you know, it's a hyper violent, traumatic. So some of these images of these people are just burned into their head. So I never talk about the crime at all. I did a lot of special victims cases. I don't talk about any of that stuff. I just get a rapport with the person and just, you know, try to make it the best experience. And the one thing I always did was I try to empower them by being like, help me to help you. This is you getting back at the person. The best you do, no stress. We help the detectives in the field catch this guy. And, you know, this is you fighting against them. And that always worked. Just having that relationship with the victim to get the best sketch I can do, it helped out. And you could see a lot of my cases, how close they got. It's just making them as calm and making it, you know, it's a horrible experience, but making it enjoyable to bridge that gap.
That's people skills from being on the street for 9 years.
Yeah.
Just knowing how to talk to people. Yeah. That's what
it's really that. Like, that's like the big thing, you know, talking to people.
That's a lot of people. Yeah. They've seen Narcos or they've seen the podcast or whatever. And I get a lot of messages, especially from young people. We were on the college circuit, university circuit there for a while and still are to a certain degree. And you get these messages from these young people. Oh, I'd love to be a DEA agent. I'd love to be a federal agent. What's your advice? Go get some experience.
Yeah.
You know, if you could be a street cop to start with, it just teaches you how to deal with people. I mean, yeah. One of the first things you learn is just about everybody's going to lie to you, right? You can't believe what they tell you. But you can see the difference. Like, I was a cop for 12 years before I became a fed, and I didn't even know what DEA was. A buddy of mine's the one that told me about it, and he'd been a Virginia State Trooper. But when you get on the job, the agents, and this is not 100%, but a lot of the agents that don't either have military or law enforcement experience or even really professional experience, you can tell because they're not comfortable talking to others. They haven't developed those skills yet. And depending on where you're stationed, you eventually will.
Yeah.
But it's just a handicap to start with when you don't have that background to fall back on. And I can't imagine a rookie coming right out of art school and becoming an artist with a big police department.
Well, that was the thing. So like sketch artists are unfortunately like dying out just because of cameras and TV and everything is just like on video. But when I became one, I had a list of every artist in the country. It was less than 100. So about 20% of them are civilians. And the NYPD though wanted you I became a detective. I fell into the detective bureau, but they wanted people with all the police law enforcement background for the spot for the reasons why you're saying, you know, and their opinion was they wanted that, you know, hold the investigative detective background to, you know, help with the cases and, you know, do the best you can.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
When you got in the unit, did they send you for any additional training, or this is just natural talent?
All the sketch artist training was all done in-house. We had, like, my senior artist was showing me how to do everything, and was that. But then I did other detective bureau training and stuff, like homicide, special victims. I did all the regular detective bureau stuff. But, like, honest, all that and just the experience, you know, looking back my first year there compared to when I left, I had it down pat, down to, like, you know, you could do it no problem.
Did you ever try any of the computer programs where you bring in different mouths and mustaches and all that?
No. We'd always draw in pencil and paper, and then we would import it into the computer to enhance it. But I know there's some programs the FBI used to I think they still do, where you just click, like, the features and stuff. But we did it really old school. So the unit was made in 1957, and we kind of just added stuff to it, but we pretty much old schooled it all the way to the end.
Yeah, after you and I had a conversation, I did a little research on sketch artists in law enforcement. And I'm thinking, okay, you got 38,000 cops and you've only got 3 artists in NYPD. And then I think I was looking at Texas and they've got like 2 that are kind of with Texas DPS, which includes the Rangers, but they also farm out to the local, you know, other local law enforcement agencies for the whole state of Texas, which is huge. It's just amazing. But I guess the modern technology, like you said, but even the cameras, the quality of the video cameras and most of them is horrible.
Yeah, my big customers in the detective bureau were special victims, transit robbery, cold case, like homicide, a lot of stuff that you didn't have cameras accessible, but a lot of daily, like I used to be in the 90s and the early thousands, thousands of cases. And we went down to hundreds just because of technology.
Could a beat cop call you and ask you to come and do a sketch, or does it have to be a detective?
No, usually a detective. A beat cop would refer to the school precinct squads and they'd go from there and stuff. But it, what was great too is, like, you know, throughout the year doing cases, like I had a rapport with like a lot of detectives all over the place. So like people, I had people that didn't even know that the sketch artist unit existed. And they'd be like, oh, you're on a dead end in this case. Call my boy Klein up. And they call me up. Yep, no problem. Come on in. We'll take care of you. And, you know, and I so give them a sketch and, you know, give another angle, you know, to help them go down, you know. So the great experience. I had a lot of awesome cases working in the sketch artist unit, all different types, you know.
So I read about one case called the Brooklyn Slasher. Like it was in March and 16. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That was a really great case. And it was, what do you call it? It ended up being an attempted murder, but it was just like a perfect storm. I'm trying to remember what happened. There was a reason why it took off, but pretty much what happened was a woman was on a park bench and a guy wearing an American bandana mask just walked up to her and slit her throat. She was very fortunate. She like survived, but there was a guy selling textbooks to a local school. And he was just like walking along and saw the guy and he remembered everything about him. He's like, his hair looks like the running back for the Baltimore Ravens. He looks like this, looks that, boom, boom, boom. So I did the drawing and within a couple hours, they knew exactly who he was and they were able to arrest him.
Holy cow.
Yeah. There was something going on in the city and there was a giant press conference about it at One Police Plaza. Mm-hmm. And you know what it was? That time frame, there was a huge rash of stranger slashings. So that case, they locked him up pretty quickly. So the mayor, the police commissioner, all of them there, they had a picture of my sketch. You know, I was like, hey, look, we're actively looking for these people. And we just caught this guy. This guy's, you know. And so that was there. And it just blew up. And then I got interviewed for a bunch of stuff about it. But that was my first really cool case. And it just kept going on and on. It's cool doing work, getting out there, helping people. And then you just see it out in the public, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just
very cool. And for our listeners, if you're interested, you can go online and see that. And they've actually got his sketch next to a picture of the defendant. And it's scary.
It's pretty close. Yeah. It's wild, man. It's just like, once again, that I'm just a tool. You know, that was what that guy said. You know, if that guy said he had clown hair and a big red nose, I would have drawn that. Right. But that he made it happen. You know, his recollection was able, you know, I was able to get it out.
So you went in and what was it, 15? And then you retired from the department when? 23.
Yep.
So in 8 years, or almost 8 years, how many sketches do you think you drew?
Dude, hundreds.
Hundreds or thousands?
Yeah. No, not about. Maybe up to almost to 1,000, but it was a lot. But like every type of case you can imagine, from sexual assault all the way up to, you know, some one of the cases I had at the very end was a old case, a guy that was murdered in 1975, and I had to reconstruct his skeleton, and they ended up catching the guy. And he pled out and is currently serving pretty much the rest of his life in jail for a homicide. Wow. Yeah, pretty wild stuff.
Which is, if you had to pick one case that is most memorable to you, that you're most proud of, would those be one of them? Or
yeah, that was a really good case. And it was nice. Like I left on that a high note. Like they did that work, and I started that case like probably 2 years before I retired. So like to see that come to fruition as I walked out the door. But I had one case, I'm not going to say I'm happy about, excited, but it's an odd case, but it's definitely a memorable case a couple of years back. So I had a case where it was a 15-year-old girl got raped by an 18-year-old boy walking home from school. He pushed into a bathroom. So this is an interesting case. So I interviewed her, did the case, the sketch. And it was blasted all over the media, pretty hardcore. And it was everywhere. They did a press conference on it. It was going. So I was checking on it on the news all the time, seeing if they caught anybody yet. Nothing. The bathroom where she got raped, they had my sketch up, everything like that. So I'm actually dignitary qualified trained. So I'm protecting the president of Hungary. I'm Times Square and I'm walking. So I'm checking for the story again because it was all over NYPD news and the story's gone. It's completely gone. So like an hour goes by, my wife sends me an article from the New York Post about the case. So the kid saw this sketch online that he's like, shit, they got me. And he committed suicide. He jumped off a building and died. Yeah. So my sketch killed somebody. Yeah, but that's pretty wild. And if you read it, the kid, his friend was like, yo, they know exactly who I am. They have my drawing up everywhere. And the kid committed suicide. So that's a pretty, pretty wild.
You know, and I know some people probably think we're cold hearted, but you know, kid made his choices.
Yeah.
He didn't have to jump off that building. He didn't have to rape that girl.
Tragic. Yeah. But that just showed you like the power of that sketch.
Oh.
Yeah. But that's one of many wild ones.
Yeah.
You want me to tell a story about the cold case?
Yes, please.
Yeah. So this awesome detective brought the case in. It was a cold case. So I'm going to try to remember. It's a really long case. I'm going to try to remember as best I can. A woman was going through therapy and she remembered some traumatic event from the 70s. And she's like, my stepdad used to molest me. He came home one day with a body parts in a bag. So the shrink is like, oh my God, you need to tell the police. So she goes to a local precinct. She's like, listen, when I was a little kid, my stepdad, bad guy, brought home a garbage bag with body parts in it and had me help him bury it in the backyard. So the detectives are like, how do you know it was a body in there? And she's like, a bone fragment pierced through the plastic bag and actually stabbed my leg. So they go to the house. They tell the new family living there, like, there might be a body back in the backyard. Mind searching it? Like, no problem. They get the warrants, everything like that. They bring a cadaver dog back there. Dog sits right down. Next thing, so they excavate the whole backyard. So they find bones and everything in a plastic garbage buried centered. Supposedly there was a bag buried in the corner, but a shed was built there. So whoever built the shed must have dug it up and just thrown it out. So they never recovered the head or anything like that. So they got the bones. So they did DNA tests. I forget who they worked through, but big, along with the FBI, everything like that, they figured out relatives of who this person is. And the guy went missing back in the 75. So the guy was in his 80s. He was kind of a little off, a little haggard. He would kind of just like wander the streets and stuff like that. But he always kept lots of cash in his pocket. So he went missing. So all the family members, they contacted. So we know it's this guy. Can you draw a picture of him based on his... There's no photos of him, by the way. No photos. Can you draw him based on his DNA records? It tells all the different things about him. Male, white, approximately 6 foot, this and that. And also we have some of his relatives, his nieces and nephews. If you look at them, can you put together a picture? I never tell anybody no. No problem. Hang up the phone. I'm like, hey, now I'm
going to do this.
Right. I'm like, yo, we got all the magic behind the scenes. Got to make it happen. I look at all the family members and they all have the same eyebrow structure, the same nose, facial structure, everything like that. So I do a couple drawings of him with different facial hair, you know, switched around, but the same guy. So the niece is a three-way phone call to the case detective, everything. He looks just like that one. Like, all right, cool. So I did all that work, right? So then they end up finding one photograph of him. After all that work, they find one photograph of him in his World War I Army uniform. This is what he looked like in World War I. Can you age progress him? So I'm like, yep, no problem. So I actually took that photograph and age progressed him to his 80s. And it looked close to the original drawing I did. And that's what they used to help with the case and everything. So they showed that sketch around. So what happened with him was he was walking home and a local barber was like, hey, you want a haircut? And the guy was like, yeah, no, I'll get a haircut. Went in there. The barber killed him, locked up, killed him, cut him up in pieces, took his money, and then buried him at home. So they were able to use that sketch.
Jeez.
People that had been going to that place for years and years, they were able to ID him and get, I think his brother said that, yeah, that's the guy that came through. So they ended up arresting him. He fought it. So we're supposed to go to trial for it. And at the last second, he pled out and that's it. And I think he's in his 70s now, the perp. But yeah, bad dude, man. But it's wild though. He killed that one guy and did that whole thing. How many more people did he kill?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all online. You can read the articles and everything. But,
oh my gosh.
I'm trying to remember his name. Yeah. That was in George Seitz, S-E-I-T-Z. Yeah.
Wow. How do you age progress somebody in a drawing?
It's horrible. When you get older, your ears get bigger, your nose gets bigger. All these lines start coming. Through my training, they were showing me how to do it. And then like you just see it, you know. It's funny now. Anytime I see somebody, I can imagine them like 50 years older.
Jeez. So that kind of cuts down on your dating life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I know what you're going to look like later.
So But that was a really, really cool case. And that, yeah, and I was just a small part of it, you know. The case detectives flying all over the country because all the victims' relatives,
yeah,
they were all over the place. Utah, California, Florida. And that was a regular squad detective who got that case. But just great work and to find justice for that poor guy that was murdered so many years ago.
You know what? That's good teamwork and bringing all your tools that you have available to you to the table and solving a crime.
Yeah.
How many years after that murder was he arrested? Do you remember?
I think 2021 is when he got arrested. So,
and the crime happened in 75, did you say?
75 or 76. Yeah. So he was in his 80s. So they had a missing report too from the 70s when he went missing and stuff. That had all the information on him and stuff, how much he weighed and stuff like that. So, but a shot in the dark.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I did a lot of cold cases. A lot. It's so hard. I had a murdered, newborn baby that was found in a garbage bag. And that case is from the 90s and never went anywhere and stuff. But, you know, hopefully in the future. But that one manifested to the rest of the guy, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, real justice for that poor guy.
So, and you said, I think January 23 is when you retired from the police department?
Yeah.
Was there a reason why, or you just wanted to try something else?
It was this time to go. So I started a side business, doing artwork and stuff like that. And that was just doing well. And I was like, you know, it's time for the next chapter. Also, too, like cases started coming down a bit. And it was just the writing was on the wall. Like, how long is the artist unit going to be around for?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they just disbanded the unit a couple months ago just because a lot of the manpower in NYPD, they're going through manpower crisis like most police departments. Mm-hmm. So all these specialty units are really getting looked at and people are getting reallocated and stuff to fill in for patrol and all stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I saw the writing on the wall and let's do the next chapter. I had an awesome ride, you know, next challenge.
So between your military time and your police time, how many years retirement did you have? 20 or 30?
Over 20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you, man.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the other New York cops that I've talked to here on the show, they hit the 20-year mark and they're like, yeah, time to go.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, Rick and Vic, they talk about how busy a shift is. I tell you what, when I was a city cop, and this is a small town, West Virginia, but if you got 6 calls in a night, maybe 8 calls, that was a busy night.
Yeah.
Everything else is more on view. It's things that you roll up on doing proactive law enforcement. I remember when I came back from South America, I got stationed in Greensboro, North Carolina, and there was the 400-man department, 400 officers plus. And there were times when we'd be out doing things and we'd need a uniform to maybe do a traffic stop or a prisoner transport. And, you know, we'd have a Greensboro cop with us and they call into dispatch and they would call out 10-100. Not a single officer available.
Really? Yeah.
Everybody was on a call. It's just, I guess, the sign of the times, how busy things have gotten. Yeah. So now you start your own business as an independent artist and that's what you're doing now. So do you have, what's your specialty?
I just do a lot of like pop art, movie, nerd art, whatever. And I came up with a brand called Battle Tribe. And I wasn't a big social media guy. And one of my friends is like, for artists, Instagram is a really great platform. You can put all your artwork out there. So I did that. And with my background, a lot of people enjoyed it. And it just kept growing and growing. And then I started doing commission work for a lot of different companies. Cry Precision, Oakley, Black Rifle Coffee, like a lot of different veteran organizations and stuff. And do some nonprofit work. And it just kept growing and growing. And I just do that and can work from the peacefulness of my home and just keep going.
So for those corporate events, I mean, what is it you're drawing? Logos, business logos?
Business logos, merchandise, t-shirts, stuff. I've worked on a ton of different stuff. I also do animation. I've done animation for music videos and stuff. I've done 2 children's books. There's a gentleman, if you Google him, there's a great guy, Christian Craighead. He was a British SAS guy that was at the Nairobi Hotel terrorist attack, killed a couple terrorists over there. Mm-hmm. So me and him became friends through social media and then friends in real life. And then he reached out to me, you want to do a children's book with me? I'm like, absolutely. So he did that. It's a good seller on Amazon. And then,
wow.
Yeah, really just like, that's the one great thing is I have this foundation from law enforcement and now I'm able to do whatever I want to do. And I just like whatever project comes up, you know, oh, you want to get involved? I'm like, yeah, no problem. And I get involved and just lend my artistic ability as best as I can and you know, just make stuff happen.
A
bucket list.
Are you making a good living at it?
Yeah. Yep. Doing very well with it.
That's fantastic. I mean, you're taking a God-given ability here, and you become an entrepreneur. And
that's it.
And plus, you served your country in two different capacities. Wow. And I looked you up on Instagram. You did pretty good on there. You got 55,600 followers.
Yeah.
And on TikTok, you got close to 16,000. That's pretty good. One other thing, I found an award that you didn't tell me about, and that you got Cop of the Month in 2015 from the 107th Precinct Community Council.
No, there's another guy with my same name.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's my evil doppelganger. So yeah. Yeah, I got a community award in, like, I forget what year. I think 2010 in the 101 precinct. You said the 107. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Award that you got, what was that in reference to?
It was two guys doing a robbery. So I got them and got it. And they had a gun in the car. And, you know, that was pretty much it. Pretty simple cut case.
But it came from a community council, not the police department?
No, what happens is every month they put up somebody for the cop of the month. Mm-hmm. So they always put a couple names in, and everybody looks at the stories, and, you know, whatever the one was, the coolest one for the month, we get a plaque and an award.
Cool.
Yeah.
Those are the best.
Yeah, that's it. So
I looked up your battle tribe, and for our listeners here, go on Etsy, Etsy, and just type in battle tribe. It's amazing. The amount of stuff you have available in here, those little stickers. I mean, he's got clothing. You got action figures. You got hats. You got T-shirts and hoodies. It's impressive. I tell you what. And I've looked at your art on Instagram, and it's extremely creative.
Yeah, I try to do like wide range. I do like really serious stuff, and then I do funny stuff. You know, like I do cartoons. I do animation. There's like so many different things. And the greatest thing now, one of the things with social media, is a lot of downsides of social media, but the one thing is just the reach and the accessibility to do what you want to do, you know?
Yeah. It's marketing.
Yeah.
That's what you need in a business. I've been trying to do that here for a few years, but you do realize it's funny because when we retired from DEA, my partner Javier and I, you could not find us on social media. Mm. But then as you start a little business, you got to market yourself, right?
Yeah. So it's a fine line, you know, like you want to do it just right. You want to go too crazy, but you know what? But you have to put yourself out there.
Yep. It's and it gives people around the world an opportunity to send you hate mail too. So that's just always enjoyable. Absolutely. It's enjoyable.
Yeah.
Here I am all these years later still pissing people off. So for our listeners here, if you want to find Matt online at Instagram, it's Matt Rendar, R-E-N-D-A-R. Okay. Matt Rendar, not Matt Klein. I think I typed in Matt Klein to start with, and that's where I got to Matt Rendar.
He
told me about that as well. So I knew about that. On TikTok, it's the same thing, Matt Rendar. You're on X, not real big on X, but Matt Rendar also. And then his website is Battle Tribe, and that's on Etsy. And you just type in Battle Tribe. It's amazing. I'm really interested. Those little stickers. In fact, when we finish, I want to ask you how you got these stickers, because I've been trying to figure out how to do that here for Game of Crimes. If you had it all to do over again, all these years later, from when you graduated high school to today, what would you change, if anything?
I wouldn't change a thing. I've been very blessed, you know, with just the way my life and a lot of great people I've come across that have inspired me and helped me. And I wouldn't change a thing. It's so funny though, in everybody's life, you look at like, oh, there's things you really wanted to do, like a door you really wanted to go, and that door got closed for some reason, and your life goes another direction. But as you get older, now it all makes sense.
It does.
And I'm just enjoying life and moving forward.
If people want to contact you, how would they go about reaching out to you?
Best way is, I would say, through Instagram. That's like the most active I am. You just DM me and I'll get back to you. Yep.
Excellent. So everybody, if you're looking for any kind of artwork, go over there and look at it. I'm not kidding. It's impressive. It's really impressive, especially what you have on Etsy.
Thank you.
So I think that brings us to the end of our little get together here, but you ever had any thoughts about writing a book about your adventures in life and how this has all developed?
Yeah, maybe down the road, you know. I mean, not to be a downer, a lot of stories are just really gritty and bad. But yeah, maybe down the road. I'll tell you, like, my wife tells me, you're like Forrest Gump. I've just met so many great people and just weird situations. Like, I shook the president's hand at the 9/11 memorial one year. Like, I met Steven Spielberg one year. I just met so many wild, I mean, you, sir, you know, like, yeah. Just been very blessed. It's just maybe one day a book, maybe.
Well, if you ever do, let me know. We'll promote it here on Game of Crimes.
Will do.
As you were a guest. And you know, what you said about those open and closed doors, I don't believe in luck and I don't believe in coincidence. I think everything happens for a reason.
Oh, 1,000%.
The fact that you got blown up and then you survived it with, I don't want to minimize your injuries, but you were able to recuperate almost immediately and go right back out on patrol. That's not, there's nothing lucky about that. You know, there was a reason. And, as, you know, as a Christian, I believe that the good Lord controls everything we do.
So. The same here. I think the man in the sky, JC, was like, today's not your day. Because I was really freaking close to that thing, you know, and it should have suffered way more than I did.
Just being on the streets of New York City as a cop during the time that you were there, it could have happened any day.
Yeah. It's it's wild. You know, you think about, you know, I've thought about this, when it's all over and you go upstairs and you talk to the big man, like, I wonder how many times when you were a police officer where, like, you walked up to a car and that was going to be the biggest gun battle of your life, but it just didn't happen for some reason. You know, like, the guy didn't think he'd get over on you. Or I wonder how many close calls that you just don't know about, especially law enforcement and the military and stuff.
Exactly. I'm with you 100% there, brother. Matt, it's been a true honor to have you on here, brother. For you to give me all the time that you've given me between our pre-calls and that little, a couple little technical issues getting started here, because it's Murphy's Law. You know, I live with it.
That's it.
And then to get an interview like this, you're the first sketch artist we've ever had on here. So this is the first for the show. If there's anything I can ever do for you, you know how to contact me.
Thank you
so much. It's still looking out for the brotherhood, as far as I'm concerned, even into retirement. And for our listeners, show Matt some love here. Check him out on Instagram. Check him out on Etsy, on TikTok. If you're looking for art projects, you know, here's a man. I mean, just go look at his work. I think you'll be fairly impressed. And once again, just like always, I can't thank you folks enough for continuing to come back every week to listen to the fantastic guests that come on here. It's not about Murph. It's about the people that I bring on here, whether they're former law enforcement, current law enforcement, first responders, our military heroes, and, you know, occasionally bring in a former bad guy so you can hear what their point of view is on the world, as skewed up as that might be. It's very eye-opening. But I know I couldn't do any of this without you. Thank you again for coming back. And why do you come back? Well, it's because you came back to the biggest, baddest, most dangerous game of all, and that's the Game of Crimes. God bless. We'll see you next week. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.